say initially that I was feeling uneasy earlier, like there was a hindering spirit here, but for some reason I don't feel that here now. So I just thank everyone for just rising to the occasion to worship Him and Him alone. All right, today I'm going to be talking about kingdom structure. It's kind of a takeoff of today's Torah portion. And this is not in any way to add to what Jim already had said, because I want you to remember some things that he did say that will help you understand what I'm going to be talking about. But in quick summary, where we are, and this isn't a Torah portion lesson, but it has, I'm going to incorporate some of this into it. Okay, where we are in our Torah portion in Devarim, quick summary is that Moshe has been telling the nation of Israel, basically, to follow Yahweh across the Jordan. But he said it, that he goes before you. But, all right, follow Yah across the Jordan. And then what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to take dominion over the evil inhabitants that are there. In other words, Israel is supposed to be the arm of the Father in judgment in this case. So, we're supposed to go over there, and after taking dominion, they are supposed to establish the rule of Torah in the promised land. So, when Moshe is talking about this today, we learned about how part of the kingdom structure, he says, when you go into the land, you're going to set up at every gate of the cities judges and officers. And then in the Torah portion, well, let me not get too far ahead. All right, so backdrop, we're supposed to go in, take dominion, and then we're supposed to set up a rule of the land. Now, does this sound familiar? Anybody? Does it sound familiar of anything that we've read previous in the Torah? All right, I'll give you a hint. Adam's created. Genesis 1. What does Yah tell Adam to do? That is the second thing to do. Or no, he's in Genesis 1, the key verbs there is, where is it? Is to subdue and rule. Genesis 1. All right. In Genesis 2, we see a little change in the verbs. And in Genesis 2, it talks about to serve and to guard. Does this sound familiar? Exactly the process we first hear from Moshe, to go in and subdue the land. Now he's setting up servants. Okay, so let's say that I initially want to start this premise of today's talk with this statement that the earth is not ours. It belongs to its creator, to God himself, to Elohim himself. Okay, nobody's going to argue with that, right? Hope not. However, that one statement seems to get forgot a lot, that the earth is not ours, belongs to our Creator. Bereshit bara Elohim et ha shamayim ve'et ha aretz. Everybody knows what that is. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So in the first chapter, just to look at this a little bit closer, God gives a command to humanity to fill the earth and subdue it, to rule over the fish of the sea, the birds of the sky, and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So like I said before, subdue and rule are the verbs of dominance in this, in one. And then in the second chapter, God tells man to li ovda, is to serve, and to li shomra, to guard. Now, when we look even closer in Genesis 1, we see that it speaks about humanity as the crown of his creation. Humans have the unique ability to relate to his creator as no other creation can. Adam was made with the ability to dominate nature and exercise control over the forces that shape the physical world. And there's a statement that John Kennedy said. He said, "Man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of poverty and to abolish humanity." That's what we have in our hands, to either do good or to do bad. So power, basically, morally, you know, there's some people that say moral power corrupts, but power really is morally neutral. So it can be used to heal or wound, build or destroy. So Genesis 2, by contrast, is about morality and responsibility. It also mentions that power has its limits. Everything has its boundaries. We may have the power and the abilities, but we may not necessarily have the right. And we all have testimonies of things that we've done, some good and some bad, of where we've taken action that we had the right to do, or we thought we had the right to do, at least we had the power to do it, and then realized later on that we misused our power. So the earth and the people, again, are not ours. We all belong to Elohim who made it. So therefore, we're really just custodians and stewards, and we are here to serve and to care for it. So as we get into Genesis 3, we see the serpent, we see the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So we can spin our wheels about what the fruit was, why the serpent spoke, what was the nature of the first sin. I mean, we can all talk about these, but the primary point the Torah is talking about is that even in paradise, there's limits. Sometimes we ignore about the limit part. Okay. Basically, when you look at history, a similar pattern can be traced almost everywhere that fallen human beings have been. We have been more mindful about our ability to subdue and rule rather than serve and guard. So, we go back to Devarim. Moshe is about to leave the stage of life, and he's given instructions how the nation should preserve themselves forever. So, we see at the beginning of the Torah portion, we see the judges and officers mentioned. Then we see kings. We see prophets. And we see priests mentioned, five. Again, judges, officers, priests, kings, and prophets. Fast forward, Shaul, Ephesians 4:11. He's mentioning five administrations of order in the kingdom. And what does he say? Apostles, prophets, evangelists, shepherds, and teachers. How many is that? Five. Is there any correlation between the five that Moshe has mentioned and the five that Shaul is mentioning? Maybe there's some correlations, but what's the bottom line here? We're talking about order, and we're talking about men who are raised up to serve and to guard. That's quite different than most of our leaders today. They want to subdue and rule, but not in our Father's kingdom. But now let's go a little bit deeper. Why did he set up the five in Devarim and the five in Ephesians? Why did he set these up? All right. Let's get a little interactive here. I'm going to ask you a question. Are the scriptures all we need for our kingdom life? I hear a no. I hear a lot of I don't knows.
No. Maybe.
All right, good. All right. It's show and tell time. All right, let's just say, of course we know I'm married to my beautiful wife, but let's just say I'm going to be going on an extended trip. It might take 6 months, it might take a year, it may take a year and a half. But for the time that I have with my wife, I show that I love her, we have interaction, we have intimacy in relationship. And then on my way to leaving, I know I'm not going to be there with her for a long time. So what do I do? Good. This sounds like a shower, baby shower. So in the card, I write a whole bunch of sweet somethings. All right? And I give it to my lovely wife as I hop on the plane and go on my extended tour. Okay, let's just say I'm 2 weeks into this trip. And you've read the card, okay, maybe a couple times. So what is going through your mind? You have the card, and you're probably wondering what I'm doing. But so you're by yourself, and you have the card. So what would be going through your mind? Do you have any idea? Yeah. Okay. The card is not the same as having me in person. I wrote down a whole bunch of stuff in that. But let's say tires, you get a flat tire. What do you want to know? Well, wouldn't you want to get in touch with me as to what to do? All right. So even though I wrote everything that I thought she was going to need, there's still some things that are going to come up in her life that she's going to want to talk to me about. Or maybe she gets frustrated and she wants somebody to, what do you call it? To lean on or to vent? Okay. Is that important too? So what would happen, what do you think I would feel like if she fell in love with this card and never corresponded with me? What do you think I would feel like? That seems silly, to fall in love with the card, right? Do you see where I'm going with this? We have a love letter. And guess what we do? We fall in love with this. And the author of the love letter becomes a shadow. This is what the father was trying to get at with setting up these people, because not everything is written in the Tanakh or the Torah that we need to live by. Because there's always something. That's why you have to have a judge or you have to have a prophet, because people are going to fall away. They're going to get into this. Even God's chosen people are going to get themselves into some kind of trouble, and it's not specifically in black and white on your love letter. So like James was saying, or Jim was saying, there's a lot of things that don't go against the written scripture, but they're not written specifically in the scripture. So every word, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word, right? You need his word in your life. Not just the written love letter card, but you're going to need to hear him, because that's really where your life is. That's what's going to bring that love letter to life, is his spirit talking with you. All right. So, you may want to say, you know, if you really look at this logically, you say, Adam, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they didn't have the word. They didn't have the written word. But they had something far more glorious, and that was his presence. Anytime, just for myself, if I put down in my little love letter everything I want to write, it still diminishes me. I am kind of restricted into that card. You take that card, it's me, but it's not, I mean, it's my thoughts, but it's not me. So it's like Moshe, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, they got the real thing. And as glorious as the Torah is, doesn't seem fair, does it? They get the real thing, I get the written word. Don't you see that there's something more? The written word, Paul says it so many times, is meant to lead us to the real thing, the real one. Without the quickening breath of his spirit upon each person, his walking and talking with each of his children, evening and morning, Without that, a true Shema lifestyle is impossible. So you're serving the Torah becomes basically frustration. It's a work of the flesh. I know I may be stepping on toes who don't really understand what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, as beautiful as the Torah is, without the Spirit, without you having an intimate relationship with the Father, if you do not have that, it's just a work of the flesh. The Holy One created us with an innate need for such intimacy. If we are to live by faith and to have passionate fidelity to the Holy One's revealed instructions, we must receive those instructions down in the deepest part of us. And hearing from Him, like you said, hearing without ears, sometimes that's the way to get it down in us. And it's kind of a paradox. Why is it sometimes to see what the Father's trying to show us, we have to cover our eyes? Why is it to hear Him, sometimes we have to plug our ears? Seems like a paradox to be able to see and hear and have them covered or plugged. Consider the words of Moshe. Now he got the download of the Torah face to face, right? He saw the finger of the Father engrave the tablets. But why would he say, "Now therefore, if I have found favor in your sight, please show me your ways, that I may know you in order to find favor in your sight. Consider too that this nation is your people." Why would he say that? He knew that there was far more than what was just written, because he was experiencing it. This is something, it's simple, but it takes an attitude that goes beyond our distractions of everyday life. So, when you hear a person that has this same kind of attitude, same kind of prayer, that is a true ambassador for the kingdom. The prophet, the priest, the king, the officers, the judges, so many times, if they get in the flesh, they're just going to subdue and rule. They're going to consider you their people. Too many leaders have bought into this. A lot of times it's because they've never had a mentor. They've just been, it was their choice. There's all kinds of reasons. But let's just say, remember, the people who consider you His, that's the one you want to be submissive to. Then he talks, Moses is talking about the correct rulers of the nation, but then he goes on, he says, because of his love, he says, there's going to be false prophets. And this is why it's so important for us to hear His voice and to know it's His voice. You have to be able to distinguish His voice from another. Is that just rambling? Well, Yeshua said, "My sheep hear my voice, and I know them and they follow me." So we are to clearly distinguish the difference between the voice of our king and the voice of another. But when something comes our way, a word, we are to humbly, we are to respectfully, and in a way that honors the first commandment and the second commandment, we're supposed to test all things. It's our duty to test all things. So, everything, even what I'm saying now, please just know that I'm included in this. Everything has to go through the Father's litmus tests. Now, let me, before I go any further on this, let me ask another question. Should we focus on counterfeits? They don't teach people that handle money how to spot counterfeits, do they? Otherwise, you'll be all over so much time because they keep switching, changing. You learn the real thing first. Concern yourself with the real thing. And then when something does come by, you're going to know it. So, we are not to designate ourselves as false prophecy police or false prophet police. It doesn't matter what you're exposed to on the internet, on social media, on the radio, on television, the public airwaves. They're spouting something. Don't consider them your enemy. Maybe it's not even our business. We shouldn't make it our business. Why? Because we got too many other things to be doing other than witch hunting. We got too many other things to think about rather than going around checking to see if somebody's got one little letter out of order there. And sometimes it's more than that. But guess what? The Father sometimes allows that heresy to come in. Why would he do that? Yeah, test us. What's he testing? To see if we're going to wander off on something that sounds better than his love letter. They are, in the Holy One's wisdom, allowed to come into our world to test our hearts. Will we allow them to sway us from the truth? Will we spread, let's just say we know of something, are we going to spread fear or paranoia? Are we going to spread a bad report? You know, we can be exposed to these people. We might be able to identify who a false prophet is and still lose the battle because we get distracted and we get a bad attitude. And if we get people in paranoia or fear, guess what? That's the opposite of start drawing them away from the good reports. Start drawing them away from the path that leads to Him with Him in our focus. No. So we can still goof up by chasing these rabbit trails. So anyway, we got to remain calm. Because they're going to come, we got to remain faithful to the Holy One. We got to remain faithful to the Torah. We got to stay on task. That is the main thing. Staying on task of what the Father has you doing, your mission. Now, real quick, I'm going to mention three things on how to recognize a counterfeit. Just three. Is what is being said at odds with the attributes, the personality, the message and the objectives of the Holy One that's been revealed in Torah. Does what they are saying actively advance the grand redemptive plan? Does it advance it? Or does it set up basically another gospel? Does it primarily draw, this is the big one, who does it draw attention to, that message? Does it draw attention to the messenger? Or actually, does it draw attention to anyone but the Messiah? That's what I'm going to leave you with. It's a simple life, but again, we are created to take the love letter and to seek out the one who wrote it. Otherwise, all you have is the love letter and not the author. It's a challenge. It's a challenge to me. But it's simple. Don't fall in love with the love letter. That love letter is to bring you to Him. That's your end goal. That's your love. And then guess what? You're going to love the love letter even more because it's of Him. All right? And you'll understand the love letter much better. Because if I write something in there and Rhonda doesn't know me, like I may have a pet name for her, and if it's somebody else, they're reading it, they won't understand it, but she will. Because it's that intimate relationship. Yeah. But the neat thing about it is we can start with the love letter even though we're not very strong in the spirit. But when we are exposed to our Creator, then the Spirit will just open that love letter like you've never seen before. Any other comments or questions? All right. Okay. Where do we start? And when you say struggling,
they're reading the scriptures and they're trying to build a relationship with the Father because they don't know where. If you aren't in this place now, you were at one time. I would submit to you a lot of people are in that place right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm just guessing, but I think through experience it's probably accurate for at least some people.
Okay. Let me kind of go back into this that maybe I didn't make as clear as I should have. Even though Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Moshe, and others had a very close contact with the Father, and then it's like, well, all we got is the black and white word. All right. He sets up the apostles, the prophets, the teachers, and that in Greek, in Ephesians, it's master teacher, not just any teacher. Okay. This is a guarantee that His word is always going to be coming at you generation after generation. What do we lack a lot right now? Are these people that we either recognize or we just don't know who these apostles are, these prophets are, these evangelists, the teachers, the shepherds? These are people that the Father wants to use to help equip the saints, right? It's all for kingdom work. Not for their glory, but for us who are just learning, or we have a stumbling block, or whatever, we should be able to have access to people that can mentor us or encourage us, or maybe even sometimes we're in a way where we just don't know the right voice. I'm going to tell you an example. We know of some people who say they have heard from the Holy Spirit that they're not supposed to read the Old Testament. All right, so was that the right voice? All right, let's put it, I hate to go to this. There are people who say they've heard from the Spirit that this calendar is right. Over here, they hear from the Spirit that this calendar is right. And then you got three or four hearing from a spirit that says, their calendar is right. What do you think about that?
Too many spirits.
Yeah.
Too many voices. All right. So basically, especially when we're new, we have trouble trying to figure out the right voice. So we need mentors. There's no easy answer to that, because I think that the Father is in the process of starting to raise up the judges as they did long ago. And you notice that the priests, you had to be born into that. The kings, you had to be born into that. A lot of the prophets were also Levites. Amos was not. Say what? Yeah, he was. So most of the prophets were priests. But look what happens in after Yeshua, when he starts to send out apostles, prophets, evangelists, teachers, shepherds. What's their qualifications? It's not necessarily natural birth, but it is a spiritual birth. So a birth is in place in both places, but spiritual birth is mandatory, or a rebirth is mandatory to start to operate in the kingdom. So I didn't come out with just formula for you on that. But it does say, if you ask, shall be given. If you seek, you'll find. If you knock, the door will be open. An acronym of ASK. Ask, seek, knock. Those are our responsibilities. We're not to try to lay off our responsibilities onto somebody else. And that's what happens a lot. That's the best answer I can give you.
That's a good answer.
Okay.
I like the way you presented it, too. I can just say, when you're talking about having a relationship with the Father, which doesn't discount understanding His Word, but having that relationship with Him, that's kind of like the faith aspect of how we walk into covenant with Him in the future.
Mm-hmm. And it's simple, but maybe not so simple in the activation of it. But at least you don't have to go to college or to seminary or anything like that for this. Court, you had a question?
In the
And the other part of that, too, is I don't know if it's there or in another place where it addresses false prophets. It talks about even if their prophecy comes true, if they're leading you into another way that's contrary to Torah, that's a false prophet. And this is going to go back to one of the burdens that Elling had. Brother Elling talked about our restoration with Judah, Brother Judah. The way Christianity portrays Yeshua, he does not pass the false prophecy test. Because Christianity says all that law was done away with. And then all of a sudden you come up with some new thing that's estranged from Torah. Guess what? That is a red flag to any Jewish person that knows that false prophet litmus test. So, in other words, we have to portray Yeshua the way he really was. We live the way he presented the gospel. And it's a whole different story with our brother Judah. But from millennia, I say millennia, we have ingrained in them that Yeshua done away with the law. And so that will never fly with our brother. Anything else?
I just wanted to, on top of that, say that Paul in Corinthians, he's talking about gifts, talks about five gifts or five. That's what you're talking about in a different way. Five
areas. For anyone who's taken notes, there's a couple scriptures that Paul presents. One that Paul presents and one in John about false prophets and about the responsibility that each and every one of us have to test the spirits. It's not somebody else's job. It's each and every one of our jobs. You can write down 1 John 4:1 and 1 Thessalonians 5:21. So, well, if there's no other comments or questions, Tom, would you like to give the blessing?